Hello and welcome to episode 7 of the NAFcast, February's episode. It's going to be slightly different to the others, and then I'm going to just try and speak all the way through and not do any serious editing to the whole thing. So strap yourselves in, because it's been a little bit of a while since the last NAFcast, which was the first Blood Bowl podcast of 2015. We're very pleased with that, getting that one out before all our stable mates. And since then, I've been a little bit busy, but the Blood Bowl world has continued apace. And so what I'm going to try and do is wrap up all the news from the Blood Bowl world for the last 7 weeks or so. There's going to be a certain amount of content from the newsletter, but obviously we'll have a little bit more space to talk around some of the headlines that were presented there. If you didn't get the NAF newsletter in the last week or so, do get in touch and let us know, and we can add you to the list. The newsletter goes to everyone who's ever been a NAF member, as long as they have their up-to-date email list. But it would be lovely if people felt inclined to rejoin the NAF as a response to the newsletter. That'd be fantastic. A few people are rejoining the NAF, or joining for the first time even, as a response to the Road to the NAF Championships tournament, which is going on Fumble, and we'll talk a little bit about that. A few people are rejoining also because of the World Cup coming up in November. Registrations for that started at the end of January, and they're going to continue until the beginning of March. So you've actually only got 3 weeks or so to get signed up for the World Cup. And we'll talk a little bit about the World Cup and what that involves as well. Other things that have been happening: we released a load of NAF data for the matches that have been played for 2013 and 2014. And a few people have been number crunching that, and I'll bring you the headlines from that, so you don't have to go away and find them and read them for yourselves. But if you feel like doing so, the data is available there. I'm going to talk a little bit about the 1,000th game for our erstwhile NAF president that's coming up, and the fact that we're going to be live streaming that on YouTube. And I'll talk a little bit about my adventures in Blood Bowl live streaming and the various things that have happened with that, just in case anyone feels like doing that. And I'll give some tips, possibly. Although tips suggest that I've actually got the hang of it, which I wouldn't suggest that I have yet. But we'll talk about that later. And what else am I going to be talking about? I was going to say hello, wasn't I? I was going to say hello to the newest podcast, which is another British one, which is lovely to have another British voice on the airwaves. Two guys based in Derby, J-Bone, who I've had the pleasure of playing against and going to a couple of tournaments with, and I'm seeing at the Water Bowl this weekend, and his mate Carter Kane, who is... they're both starting on tournaments. So they're taking a little bit of a different approach. You've got the American podcasts are quite often people who have been playing for a very, very, very long time, and I've been playing for a long time as well. And so we have a certain amount of knowledge about the tournament circuit and leagues and so on. But these two guys just picked up the game, started going to tournaments, started running their own league, and they are on a voyage of discovery, which is entertaining and quite rude. So not suitable for work, not suitable for children, but very suitable for car journeys by yourself, probably, where you want to talk about and listen to Blood Bowl. Let's start with the World Cup, the biggest event in the Blood Bowl calendar every 4 years. Has its own website, which launched a month or so ago, which is worldcup.lucini.it. So it's an Italian website, as you would expect, because the Blood Bowl World Cup is being in Italy, in Lucca. Or Lucca. I should really find out whether it's Lucca or Lucca, but one of those two. And amazingly, it's only €44 for an individual registration for 9 games of Blood Bowl. And that amazingly also includes a team, a commemorative team as part of the tournament. And there are lots and lots of tournaments where you pay more than that for just a weekend, and with not very many freebies included. So €44 each, and you get a team included as part of that, is an absolute bargain. And that's fantastic, because it does mean that that's all you have to pay at this stage. So it's a very long time in advance, but that will allow the organisers to know what their sort of proper numbers are, and should be able to arrange a real solid event. There are teams, so you need a team of 6 to go to the World Cup, and there are already over 200 people registered. Registrations have been going for a few weeks. Now, registrations do shut on March the 8th, and you have to pay by the 16th of March. That's the €44 per team, per individual, sorry. That doesn't include food and accommodation. And food and accommodation, I'm pretty sure, can be paid for later. So it's not like you have to take the entire hit for the entire trip just now. It's just the €44 per player that you just have to pay for now. And that's going to be absolutely fantastic, I think. And more details for that will be coming up over the few weeks. And they said that they're going to publicize the full breakdown of all the different nations. And there's no limit on the number of people that can go. So get yourself along for that. I know lots of people are going to make a sort of week of it because it's a lovely part of the country, lovely part of the world. A few people coming over from Australia. I know there's some American and Canadian people making the trip as well, and obviously the whole of Europe are going to converge on Northern Italy for that weekend and for that week, really. The other thing that have been driving NAF subscriptions is the road to the NAF Championships. This is a tournament that's happening on Fumble, and in the last podcast I talked about how registrations were happening that week. And it ended up with 254 coaches, which if it was a tabletop tournament would make it almost as big as the Euro Bowl and Euro Open combined at the end of last year. And I think bigger than the first World Cup, but that's one of those stats that I'm going to say and then not have anything to back it up, but I'll have to check it later. I should have said at the beginning, but I forgot that any of the stats, especially the ones that are wrong, any of the opinions that are presented are those of me, and I'm just sort of speaking. They don't represent NAF committee or the NAF itself, so don't go complaining to people if I say something you disagree with. You can complain to me if you want, and you can get in touch in lots of different ways. Official NAF on Twitter, we've got the Facebook page, and we've got officialnaf@gmail.com. The official NAF Twitter account is pretty busy, and lots of people do tweet that in order to get their tournaments mentioned. And I also pick up hashtag Blood Bowl as well, which is a nice little hashtag there. It's used a fair amount. It's used a lot more when there are blood drives going on in the US, because they seem to use hashtag Blood Bowl as well. There's a certain amount of confusion there, but it's all fine. The road to the NAF Championships is then in full swing. We're into round five now, which is the real business end. In the after round five, as per the NAF Championships, the final gets chosen, and it's only one of the people that's in the final that can win the tournament. So it might be that someone ends up on more points than someone who was in the final, but because they weren't in the final, they are not the winner. So after round five, whoever is on, probably going to be on five wins, and then whoever has the highest bonus points makes it into the final, and those two play it out. After four games, we had eight coaches who were on four wins, and so it's going to be two out of those eight who are going to be in the final. We had four undead teams. We had an Amazons, Dark Elves, Lizards, and Wood Elves. So firmly tier one teams in there, undead absolutely dominating, as they do quite often at this low team value, because they have all the tools out of the box that you need, really, including two strength five mighty blow monsters. Interestingly, the four undead teams that were left ended up in two mirror matches. Not exact mirror matches, because there was a certain spread of different skill picks that were used. So different amounts of guard. On the top table, we've got one team with four guard, another team with two guard. And we're looking at different lots of shorthands ghouls and against block ghouls and that sort of thing. Purple Goo did a brilliant sort of rundown of the teams, as he's been doing all the way through the tournament. He's been doing six or in this case, four picks from each round, and looking at those in depth, looking at the skills that were chosen and why. That thread on Fumble is definitely worth a bit of a read. The top table was between Undead and Undead, and they had 18 and 15 bonus points between them, whereas the next three teams down only had 12 bonus points, where the bonus points were net casualties plus net touchdowns. So fairly straightforward tiebreaker there. And so that whoever, if there's a winner out of that game, then they're going to be in the final pretty much. But if that game is a draw, then it certainly gets very interesting below that. At the moment, we have Gius from Italy, Giorgio Baltera, who is now on five wins because he got his game played fairly quickly. His Amazons managed to turn over the Wood Elves. which he was quite chuffed about, I think, because he'd never played Amazons before in a NAF tournament. But he can now put his feet up, and actually we're now sort of 4 days into the round, and the other teams haven't played yet. The top table is happening Friday evening, so that's the 20th of February, and that's going to be at 9 o'clock GMT. So it's worth going into that. One of the brilliant things about Fumble is the spectating that can take place. And for big matches, it's been known for there to be triple figures of spectators. That's for the really big ones, like the Fumble Cup final. Absolutely regularly, double figures worth. I've had the pleasure of playing four French coaches in my last out of my last five games. And for each of those, and whenever I've sort of dropped in another French coach, there have been lots and lots of French support for any of the coaches on there, which is fantastic. It's sort of bringing the nations together over Fumble, and that's great. The road to the NAF Championships is just the first of a load of online sanctioned NAF tournaments, and after the dust has settled on this one, it's going to be announced how the whole prediction, but that could easily be wrong, that it's going to be completely separate from the tabletop ranking, but it's yet to be announced how exactly that's going to be, how that's going to look, and so on. Might be put in a different place, but me speculating wildly, which is probably a bit naughty of me, so I'll stop that. So the spectating is a fantastic part of Fumble, and into that I was trying to tap into when I started live streaming tabletop games. I started making Blood Bowl videos looking up Fumble games, because that was quite easy, and people had done this before. Ehlers, E-H-L-E-R-S, if you look him up on YouTube, he had recorded a few Fumble games and talked alongside them. And I had quite a lot of fun doing that for a few of my matches, just trying to explain my thinking and what I was thinking during the other person's game. And I make absolutely no claims to be a overcompetent. I don't think you can be overcompetent to be. I don't know. I'm trying not to blow my trumpet in that. I'm not saying I'm a great Blood Bowl player, but I have played a lot of games, and so it is useful, I think, for some completely new coaches to see a few of the basic thinkings of someone who's played quite a few times. It would be great if someone who actually is very, very good and has the stats to prove it would do the same sort of thing. There have been tabletop match reports before, but it's quite nice having recordings of the thinking at the time. So I've said things like, I'm going to put this guy here because if this happens, then that will happen. So do have a look at those. There's a few Fumble ones. And then I expanded the whole thing onto tabletop. And so I invested a not very large sum on a webcam and stuck it into my computer, stuck it on an old lamp stand that I had, and produced a sort of plan view of a Blood Bowl pitch, which I've been fiddling with a little bit to try and get the focus right. There's a big trade-off between being able to see all the information you need in terms of rerolls and turns and score and that sort of thing, against actually being able to see the players and seeing who is who. And obviously there's another big trade-off between the experience of the people playing the game and the experience of people watching the video afterwards. And so I haven't particularly done any commentary of those games. It's just been literally the capturing the sound and capturing the vision of two guys playing a tabletop game. So probably the way to go with that is a highlights reel, in that it's an hour and a half long. Now, we did have a few spectators for each of those. So thanks to Pug in particular for popping in. He's been quite verbal in his comments about what's going on, and saying that he's in the bath during his viewing, which is slightly disturbing, but it is good. And the videos have had sort of 100 views and stuff like that. And people have given feedback in that sort of saying, oh yes, it's a good start, this could be better, and it's a bit fuzzy. And it does seem like the answer is to get a better camera, or a better laptop, or both, which isn't particularly the direction I want to go in, because it's not worth spending huge amounts of money on these things usually. It's actually the talking and the vibe rather than the actual amazing video itself that's worth going into. But I'd be very interested if anyone else has a go at recording, really, because I think it's the recording rather than the actual live streaming that's interesting, because no one's going to realistically sit down and watch an hour and a half's worth of Blood Bowl, two other people playing a Blood Bowl game, when you could be playing on Fumble Yourself or that sort of thing. But having recordings of games where you could actually say, and this is what happened here, and this is what happened here, might be worthwhile. So we'll see if anyone picks that up, or if I pick it up and do something more with it. Because at the moment, I'm really sort of recording the games that I'm playing. I'm not setting games up particularly as tutorial games or special games. I'm recording mostly games in my local league against a variety of different players. And if an interesting sort of tactical situation comes out of that, then it might be worth me clipping the video and doing that sort of thing. One of the options I went with in terms of the balance between being able to see the rerolls and score and so on, basically being able to see the dugouts and being able to focus in as much as possible on the pitch itself, was looking at an overlay. And so I used a program called OBS, Open Broadcast Software, I think it is, which is free again and is used quite a lot by Twitch.tv users. And that allows you to put an overlay in sort of match of the day style, where you can say what the score is, say what the rerolls are, and say what the turn is. Those seem to be the three most important stats. And what I did with that was I put a general call out to say, can anyone make one of these, please? Because basically you need a text file that can be updated automatically as you go along. And then the Open Broadcast Software will allow you to put that text file on top of the video that you're taking automatically, and capture the sound as well. And Krista, who runs Fumble, was good enough to take probably an hour or so out of his busy schedule to put something together that I'd been trying to for hours and hours to do. But the way it is sometimes is that if people are technical wizards, then they can do things very quickly. And I know that there are things that I do quickly that people are surprised by. So it was very kind of him to do that and save me quite a lot of time. The only problem that I found then was the technology letting me down, in that in order to be able to use the overlay properly and to use the OBS and to stream live using that, required more computer power than I had available. Bizarrely, it seems that the default on YouTube is to use a Google Hangout, which is basically like Skyping. And that means it just takes straight from the webcam and puts it straight online, whereas going through OBS is similar to capturing what's happening on your screen, and that takes up a lot more computing power. So I had to reduce the number of frames per second and reduce the frequency of capture, which basically slowed down the whole video and meant that there were a few hanging problems and so on. So what I'm going back to now, I think, is just going back to the Google Hangout, and because that does seem to be the easiest way at the moment. But what I did to help with that was I made a little ball, because one of the problems is not being able to see where the ball is. And I've used an orange skill ring for that before, but then at tournaments, lots of people use skill rings, you know, for skills. And so I made a little ball on a spike, which means that the ball hovers above the player, and I painted the ball sort of bright yellow, and that will hopefully work quite well. It was sort of inspired by the cyanide approach to showing where the ball is, and that there's this yellow beam of light on the ball carrier, and that seemed like quite a nice thing. The other interesting thing about using webcam is that there are lots and lots of pitches, custom pitches with fantastic sort of decoration on, and including the original third edition pitch with this great big double skull in the middle of the in the middle of the pitch. And that actually makes live streaming or recording basically a Blood Bowl game very tricky, because it's very difficult to see what the figures are when they're on a when they're on the background of a of any sort of pattern at all, really. The pitch that I use most often is a homemade sort of quite solid pitch, but the grass is just stripes of green, and that does seem to make identifying the miniatures a little bit easier. One of the interesting things with pitches, while I'm talking about pictures, is that there is a big, what is it? Is it an Indiegogo or a Kickstarter? Or it's one of those things going on at the moment for fantasy football fields. And they are producing a, I think it's a nine segment Blood Bowl pitch, jigsaw type style, with a load of options for the central bit where the sort of double skull is on the original third edition pitch. So basically over the centre of the pitch, where the centre circle would be if it's a football pitch. And you can have different logos there. One, so you might want a logo for Wood Elves, a logo for Undead, logo for all the different races. And I think it's reasonably good value, I think, for those pitches, in that you get one pitch of a certain design and then you get loads of different central bits, and they're up to like 55, 60 backers, I think, and it's the last weekend for that, this weekend coming up, so definitely worth searching that one out. If you're on Facebook Blood Bowl community, or if you're on Twitter and following Blood Bowl at all, then you'll probably have seen that campaign going. But it's definitely worth supporting, and I know there are a load of freebies coming, and they are really taking an interest in what their fans want and what their customers want in terms of where things should be situated, where the dugout should be, and it does look quite a nice design overall. So it's definitely worth searching that one out. But I won't be, because I've got my homemade pitch, which I made ages ago and sort of folds up nicely and is made of polystyrene. It's really solid. Works very well if you use a dice cup. Works less well if you don't use a dice cup, because the dice sort of bounce and then fall down the sides. But why anyone would not want to use a dice cup, I'll never know. But that's my personal feeling. And not official NAF policy on dice cups. You may or may not use a dice cup, whichever you feel like. Where were we? We were talking about YouTube recording. And basically it was inspired. The other thing that got me going, because I did the fumble stuff, but then I was inspired by them live streaming a game at Euro Bowl. But one of the interesting things, because I watched back a few of the games from Euro Bowl, and the sound quality was one of the things that was a little bit dodgy. And actually the sound is really interesting, because that is the feel of a tabletop game. It's you need the sound, you need what people are saying to each other, because obviously there's that communication, and that's the joy of playing a tabletop game, is that people are sitting across the table from each other and they're having this conversation. So I use a sort of proper microphone, and that's just at pitch side, and so that gets picked up as well, and that's quite fun. So after I experienced it at Euro Bowl, I thought this would be a good thing to do. I can do this, and I made it a target to sort of get the technology going for the NAF Championships, so that I could get it going for the final there. Because sadly, one of my best friends is getting married on the Saturday of the NAF Championships, and so I can't make the tournament itself. But I am going to try and come up on the Sunday and do a bit of live streaming, including hopefully sorting out the technology in time to get it for the final, because that could be actually have a few people watching. And then I was going to take it to various tournaments, where basically whenever a tournament that I was going to had Wi-Fi, which sometimes they do because they're in conference centres or schools or wherever. No, not schools. Schools don't allow you on their Wi-Fi. But if they're in conference centres, then you're likely to get the Wi-Fi. But if they're in school halls or village halls, then Wi-Fi is possibly less likely. And so I thought I would just try it out at various different places. Pubs also have quite good Wi-Fi access usually, and so I was planning to use it for the NAF Championships, because I know that's got good Wi-Fi, And then I asked about using it at Water Bowl, which I'm off to this weekend. And that is in a game store, and the guys at Element Games there have said, yeah, absolutely, that should be definitely doable. And so I thought, all right, that'll be a good road test. But then this glorious opportunity came up because it was it became apparent that it was Lycos's 1,000th game, 1,000th NAF tournament game will be the first game at Water Bowl. So he's on 999 at the moment. This is Lycos, the ex-president, who was president for 6 years of the NAF, and has been playing tournament games forever, obviously. So he's on 999 games. I think the next is Gegster, who's on about 650 or so, and then it drops down to about 450 below that, I think. But again, don't have those stats on my fingertips. But that shows that he's sort of quite a long way ahead of everyone else. And so because his first game at Water Bowl is going to be his 1,000th game, it made it sort of easier and it made it an obvious sort of one to publicise. And because it's the first game of the tournament, it should be fairly at a fairly sensible time, in that sometimes in tournaments timings slip or they come forward or go backwards. But this one should be at 10 o'clock GMT on Saturday, the 21st of February, which is where we are, the day after tomorrow. And so I'll be live streaming that one. We don't know who it's going to be against. It could be against someone from Team England. So Purple Goo, Jumanji, Pippi are going to be there. It could be against one of the whole load of Danes who are coming over for the tournament. It could be against a few of the Scots who are coming down. It could be against a complete tournament newbie. I'm not sure if there are any coming to the Water Bowl for that one. Or it could be against me, if I'm really lucky. I've got a 1 in sort of 45 chance, and that'd be quite cool. The Water Bowl is going to be a massive tournament anyway, because it's the 10th anniversary. And it's a very interesting year this year, because we've got a lot of 10th anniversary stuff coming up. Basically, the NAF tournament scene started around 2003. So some of the early tournaments had their 10th anniversaries already. But a lot of the tournaments seemed to start in 2005, and a lot of the ones that are still going now. So there are a few 10th anniversaries happening this year, and I know Water Bowl are planning a sort of big celebration with bonus freebies and that sort of thing. So it should be a fantastic tournament. We'll kick off with streaming that game at 10 o'clock, and then, if that works well, no reason we won't stream a few more games as we go through, because there's always some fantastic matchups from the shouty Danes who drink Baileys all day, to the sort of tactical back and forth between a couple of the top players from around the country, and hopefully even if people don't actually watch it at the time, the games will be there recorded for posterity, and people can go back and those are the sort of ones where it might be worth doing a sort of highlights reel, and I might well have a go at that. But again, as I say, I'm having a go, seeing how it goes. If people are interested, then that's fantastic. If other people want to have a sort of better go and get a better webcam and have a better computer and pick up on the particularly the software, I think works well, the one that Krista did, because basically the way it works is you need to have a laptop sitting next to the screen, sitting next to the pitch, sorry, and whenever you score a touchdown or whenever anything changes, you just click instead of moving your turn marker. But actually we moved the markers and clicked as well, because, you know, old habits die hard, basically. But there's no reason you can't just have your mouse there and just click the record as it goes through. And I think it's quite a nice thing to do if you feel like it. But do check that out, and feedback is always welcome. What else has been happening? We released a load of data about tournament matches from 2013 and 2014. So there's 33,000 NAF matches were played over that period. And we've looked at active NAF coaches as well. So speaking of coaches, there are currently active in the NAF. We've got 1,800 paid up members at the moment. 300 in the UK, Spain and the US, each of those. And then you've got 140 in France, you've got 160 in Germany, you've got 180 in Italy, and then you've got under 100 in a few other countries, so 95 or so in Australia, and then quite a lot of countries with double figures, and then a few scattered around the world. France actually play the most games, so despite having only half the players that UK, Spain and US have, they do play 5,500 games. They did play 5,500 of the games, or French coaches did, not necessarily played in France necessarily. Obviously, it's very easy for French coaches to go over to Belgium, over to Holland, Germany, and get to places and play matches elsewhere. Looking at the match data, the racial data was what people had quite a lot of interest in. Orcs were the most popular team in 2013 to 2014 for obvious reasons. They come in the box and they are quite a good team, really. Their tournament data is probably hampered, their sort of win rate is hampered by the fact that they're the most popular team, in that if you're a new coach, you think orcs are fantastic, brilliant, I'll take orcs, and then you, as I do, quite often go along to tournaments and you lose lots of games because the tournament scene is quite hard to get into if you haven't played very much Blood Bowl before. Although that might be changing somewhat if players start playing in the NAF, having played on Cyanide before. There might be sort of some orcish experts from Cyanide or from Fumble who go along to tournaments and dominate from the start. But certainly previously, orcs have been a race for new players. Broadly, the data is supportive of the tiers, so you've got Undead and Wood Elves up the top and lots of stunty teams down the bottom. Underworld are actually the least popular team, so they are the team that the fewest matches have been played with. And Nurgle against Vampires was the least common matchup. Someone dug out that little stat there, because only out of the 33,000 games that were played in 2013 and 2014, only 20 of them were Nurgle against Vampires. So if you can get that one in terms of filling the grid of all your teams playing against all your other teams, if you can get Nurgle against Vampires, then you've done very well indeed. Where do you go to find out more about the data? You can pop on to talkfantasyfootball.org. That's where the most traffic has been in terms of people number crunching and producing some nice pictures. You can see grids of win ratios for one race against another race, color-coded, and that sort of thing, and the percentages. And people have done other things with the percentages as well. They've said, okay, what if you remove mirror matches? What does that do to the win percentage? You do get a few changes in there, but broadly it is what you'd expect. And someone was making the point that humans do worse than they sort of should do, but that's mostly just than they should do according to the fluff. Basically, in the Blood Bowl background, you've got your Weakland Reavers, who are this amazing team with Griff Overwald and Zug, and who dominate and win over and over again, but that's obviously not supported by their stats and not supported by their win rate either. Looking at the other things we've been doing, the legacy team for 2015 has been chosen and people have signed up for it. We're going to do a Pro Elf team this year. This is the Talk Fantasy Football legacy team, and the idea is that you paint a model and you send your model to a central place, which this year is going to be me. And then once everyone has sent in their model, there's a big sort of official drawing, which will probably be live streamed with the dice this year, I imagine. Or maybe a load of balls in a bowl, one of the two. And then one person wins the entire team, which is lots of fun. So different people have signed up. We've got all the positionals signed up for. We've got a whole fistful of linemen signed up for. We've got all the stars have signed up, including like Dolphar and Prince Moranian, the ones that are not seen very often. Usually for legacy teams, Morg gets painted up and like one or two others, the most common ones. But there we are. We've got people signed up to do all six of those. We've got a wizard. We've got an apothecary. We've got reroll counters. And I'm probably going to do some sort of dugout type thing. Because I didn't sign up for a figure, and I quite like making stuff like that. Hopefully it'll look good by the time it's done. We're looking for a name this year as well, which we don't often do, but a name would be lots of fun. Probably based on Lucca, in Italy. So we're looking at the Luccaneers, as in the Buccaneers, but need some sort of original place on the front of that. Maybe some sort of Warhammer place. We'll have a look at the fluff for that, or possibly Lucky Lucans or something along those lines. We've got plenty of time to choose. There is actually still time to get involved in the Legacy team if you want to. We've got backroom staff, we've got assistant coaches and babes who can still be done, and then we're on to fans as well. There was a fantastic fans Legacy team a few years back for the 40 Miners, it was, wasn't it? The American team run by Extreme, where lots of people sent in fans of different races, all painted in the 40 Miners colours. And I think I think that was some sort of raffle to win something as well for that, which is a nice twist on the Legacy team. But yeah, still time to get involved. And if not this year, have another think about getting involved another year, because Legacy teams are good fun. And they do sort of bring the community together as well. Don't worry too much about the painting ability, because there's always a wide range, from the sort of very best painters who take part, to people who slap a little bit of paint on a model and send it off. And again, lots of people put effort into converting their models. There are some fantastic ones been put together, but then other people just take ones off the shelf, and there's no chagrin either way. You can do either of those things, contribute. One of the Legacy teams that I've had the pleasure in participating in for a few years is the Water Bowl one. They're one of the tournaments that has a Legacy team each year. I don't know how many different tournaments there are that do them, but this year is Ogres. I won it last year with Underworld, which is a lovely little team. The downside was I did have to take it for the tournament, and again, this year is Ogres, so I would quite like to win the team. But I've put quite a lot of thought into my human team, so I might quite like to play with my humans this weekend, rather than playing with ogres. Much as I do like ogres, they're one of my favourite teams. But obviously I would play with them if I took them. There have been other things happening. Someone went on to the NAF.net, the rules clarification page. We got quite a nice little page on there, if I do say so myself, that has taken together all the frequently asked questions from TFF and from various other places. It actually started from the original Specialist Games website, the one that was actually run by Games Workshop. And they had a load of for frequently asked questions on there to supplement the ones obviously that are found in the back of the rule book as well. And I've gone further than that, and I've gleaned all the little bits of information from all the questions that have been asked on Talk Fantasy Football and the NAF forum, and tried to make a definitive list of what happens in this situation and what happens in this situation. So there's things like what happens if the ball goes out in the corner of the pitch, which isn't covered by the rule book. What happens with the throwing template? How does that work? And all sorts of bits and bobs on there. Definitely worth having a look. And hopefully it's the sort of definitive list and should settle most arguments, because it's not sort of my interpretation of the rules. It's the interpretation from the Blood Bowl Rules Committee, as were. And one of the interesting ones that came up that I'd missed actually, but that had been answered by Galax Starscraper previously, was for a fanatic moving. And what it actually happens, this is for a fanatic going for it. So when a fanatic goes for it, the interpretation of the rules that makes the most sort of sense is that you actually roll for direction first, and then you roll for the go for it. Now, because you roll for direction first, that means that you might move into somebody. So this is the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. This is the throw-in template, which you use to decide where a fanatic is going to go, or a ball and chain player, I should say. Sorry, Fezglitch. And after you have moved, and therefore after you have done the block that might result from that move, that's the situation in which, and then after that has been resolved, you then do the go for it roll. And so it's entirely possible that a fanatic could move into someone, knock them over, and then fail to go for it, and so knock themselves out as well. Which is not something anyone thought before. I don't think that's the way that anyone plays it, but if you actually read the rule book carefully, that is what happens. I think people have just assumed that it's like a blitz, but obviously the Goblin Fanatic moves actually quite different to a blitz in many ways. Speaking of the Rules Committee, there's been a nice little debate going on recently on Facebook Blood Bowl community and also in the NAF.com. Not the NAFTA, started by Paco, who likes to stir things up every now and again and ask questions, which is entirely his prerogative. And he was talking about the Blood Bowl Rules Committee and whether we should be having another look at the rules. Still time, obviously, to contribute to that. There have been 100 or so votes on his various options, and there are about 200 comments on the Facebook page, which I'm not even going to try and summarise here, but do go in and have a look at that. The Facebook page and the Facebook group is up to 1,600 members now, which is fantastic. And it's a sort of thriving community, really. There's tens of posts on there every day on the Facebook one. Lots of people posting pictures of miniatures or asking questions about their teams, and lots of new players as well, because obviously if you're a new player, you won't necessarily gravitate to TFF or you won't necessarily gravitate to the NAF forum, but Facebook is where people go, so definitely worth popping into there. The other thing I've been doing as NAF media officer, I got myself onto Radio 2 in the UK, which is one of the national radio programs, and so what I'll do today is I will finish by including the little recording of my 90 seconds worth of fame. They said it was going to be 3 minutes and I was going to have a chance to explain various things, but it was the nature of these national radio things is that it didn't quite happen that way. What it was part of was they have a Friday fixture every Friday, where they talk to a minority sport. And the take that they wanted was to talk about Blood Bowl as one of the growing mind sports, which includes sort of chess and Scrabble. And that seems to be a phrase that Blood Bowl could sort of hang on to if it wanted to make itself more popular, possibly. And I'm looking into that a bit further. Thank you for listening. Hopefully you feel more up to date with what's going on in the Blood Bowl world. Check out the last round of the Road to NAF on Fumble. Check out the various stats on TFF. Check out the Blood Bowl Facebook page. And do check in for the YouTube live streaming of Lycos' 1,000th game on Saturday at 10 a.m. GMT. Get in touch at Official NAF on Twitter, officialnaf@gmail.com, and officialnaf on Facebook, or find me on the Blood Bowl community page, where I'm lurking quite often. Listen to the Radio 2 interview, and then I will talk to you fairly soon, I think, because I've got a few things in the pipeline, but I won't tell you what they are in case they don't come off. Leave you hanging. Enjoy.
On BBC Radio 2.
Now it's 7 minutes to 7 o'clock and Matt has his Friday fixture.
Yes, and we've chosen this week Blood Bowl, as nominated by Mike Davis in Swindon. Now, Mike, what interests me about this is it's part of this sort of growing sector of what's called mind sports. Just explain to us what Blood Bowl is.
Blood Bowl is a fantasy tabletop game. And if you saw people playing it, you would look a little bit like chess, but with slightly more impressive miniatures that the people had painted themselves, and they'd be rolling dice at the same time.
And the idea is that you sort of have to score touchdowns, that kind of thing.
Yeah, you have to move your figures basically across the board towards the opponent and to get across the into the end zone with the ball.
So I know what many people are going to be thinking right now is, hang on, this is just a board game. How can this possibly qualify as a sport?
Well, it's requires a massive amount of concentration, basically. A weekend tournament will involve 6 2-hour-long games, and at the end of those, people are absolutely exhausted, in the same way that it would be if they'd been playing sort of poker for a long time. And I know that poker's sort of internationally recognised as a sport, and it's very similar in that way.
And you would feel the same sort of pressure, the same sort of mind. I mean, there are other sports where you don't perhaps break into a sweat, like snooker and darts.
Yeah, absolutely. I think snooker's a really good comparison, actually, because you do need that sort of ability to think about the best thing to do under pressure. You've got lots and lots of different decisions that you could take, and it's quite easy to make the wrong decision, I think.
And this is, as I said at the start, this is part of this sort of global phenomenon of mind games, mind sports.
Yeah, I think so. Probably the most common one. I've been looking at different mind sports, and the most popular ones are chess and Scrabble, and these are sort of being taken together as things where you really have to concentrate and work hard. And if you're the best at those things, then you'll win a lot of the time because there's a lot of skill involved. And then that's moving into computer games as well.
Yeah, I know that in the Far East, you're seeing lots of these sort of major tournaments involving sort of role player games, that kind of thing. Okay, so people want to give Blood Bowl a go. Where do you think they should go?
Where should they go? Facebook's always a good place. Blood Bowl Community is the big one. And it's got 1,500 people on there. And across the UK, there'll be someone local to you who'll be absolutely over the moon if you get in touch and say that you want to give it a go. I imagine quite a lot of people will have seen these things when they were at school. But now there's a big sort of demographic, 30 to 40-year-olds, who are playing these as well. And then we've got the next generation coming through as well.
Excellent stuff. Mike Davison, Swindon, many thanks. Blood Bowl is our feature this week.